got the gavel. There we go. Let's come back to order.
Tom, can you tell Arthur to get in here? Tell him it's a surprise party for him.
All right, let's come back to order. Next item of business on our agenda are some more bills, some JEC bills. Next one is 18 LSO 0377, working draft 0.3, State Construction Department dash amendments. Tamara?
Mr. Chairman, Tamara Revley here. The bill draft that's in front of you today was requested by this committee in December in response to the construction department's presentation. In summary, this bill draft really does two things. It creates an operations division at the state construction department, and it transitions the state construction department from this alternative budgeting that they were doing to the normal state budgeting development process. Moving on to the bill draft, on page one, you see the title there is fairly narrow, and it explains that the bill relates to the State Construction Department. It provides for an operations division. It provides for standard, base, and exception budget request processes, and it repeals conflicting provisions. On page two, you see a new paragraph three is created on line six to create this third division within the State Construction Department, and that's the operations division. The other two divisions that currently exist are the State Construction Management Division and the School Facilities Division. On line 13, you see that the bill specifies that administrators may be appointed for the Construction Management Division and the School Facilities Division only. There is no administrator contemplated for the new Operations Division as it was presented to the JAC in December. Moving on, lines 17 through 23 begin the changes necessary to move the State Construction Department from alternative estimated budgeting procedures to the state's standard base and exception budgeting processes. The top of page 3 continues to strike language that relates to that other budgeting. And then on line 14, you see the sections that are repealed, and that's the remainder of these alternate budgeting procedures. Those processes and procedures are that are repealed are contained for you in the staff comments. You can see what we're taking out of current law. Finally, on page 5, you can see that the act is effective immediately.
Your notes are staff comments longer than the bill.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
And all the stuff in staff comment is going to end up where?
It is repealed, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, this is what's repealed. Okay.
Yep.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Tamara, remind me that in the statute, who is the State Construction Department required to report to and when? And is that, and are they reporting to JAC on the right? So just clarify that, would you please?
Mr. Chairman, I believe the process that was envisioned for their budgeting was to go through the governor's office. And I'm not sure. I'll have to reference whether they were also required to report to the Joint Appropriations Committee. And I can look that up if you will give me one moment.
Dell here. Dell, what do you guys do?
Mr. Chairman, Dell McComey, State Construction Department. We report directly to the governor. It's just the normal reporting as any agency. We work our budget through the budget office currently.
So by creating this operations, what will you be taking over?
Mr. Chairman, we won't be taking anything over. What it does is it allows flexibility for the department for the use of its personnel is envisioned in Senate File 92 for efficiency. Right now, with those two divisions, we're siloed over on with employees on the school side and in this construction management side. So those positions that overlap or that we could overlap, for example, project managers on the school side, instead of them being siloed for schools, we could use them for schools or for state buildings, whatever. The same with the project managers on the state side. So any of those personnel that planning staff's another good example where we've begun planning meetings with the state agencies similar to what we did on the school side, we can use them on both sides of the house. There's no increase in salaries or anything for that. It just allows us to become less siloed in our operations.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And going back to Chairman Nicholas's question and comment, I think that's a valid one. Surely this agency ought to be reporting to one of the standing committees at some point about activities and legislation and issues, particularly the things that they're involved in right now moving forward. And if that assignment's not made, I would suggest that we consider doing that.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, didn't understand where you were headed at on that end. On the school facility side, we report to the School Facilities Commission, and then we also report to the Select Committee on School Facilities. So we do, on the budget side of that, report to a legislative committee as well as the commission. On the state side or the CM side, we report to the State Building Commission as a commission also.
Mr. Chairman, follow up. That still isn't a standing committee. It's commission, and I appreciate that and get that, but I just wonder if we shouldn't consider that. So,
yeah, Mr. Co-Chair, one of the funny things about this process is as we're going through recal and all that kind of stuff, JAC just does not see the education side of the budget as a practical matter, and we don't understand it or pay a lot of time to it, and so whatever the process is, I think there would be a value for the Joint Appropriations Committee to have a better understanding of the budget on the education side. A good example is the 33% that we're now going to go out and capture. It's one of those things that's out of sight, out of mind, and it can't hurt to better educate the legislative body and you know, I think it'll ultimately help you and your orchestration as far as this goes by. So it's something that we ought to consider of, and I don't know if we really have to put it in the statute. We can just direct it, but something.
Mr. Chairman, you know, with my budget pretty well centered on capital construction type projects, certainly this committee, that's where they end up. They typically come out of the select committee with their recommendation as a bill, and that is presented to you by your LSO staff on the school side. And, of course, as you saw, we had the capital construction budget that came through the recommendations of the SBC. Then that gets into the budget on the state side. And if that would be the pleasure of this committee, again, reporting at various increments during the summer, during your session, to kind of keep you up to speed and where those are going, or maybe even where the construction's at on projects would, you know, be something we could certainly do, whether it's in statute or just an ask. If we're asked to do so, we would certainly always do that with any legislative committee. So,
well, if we're going to, if we're going to approve this and we have to explain this on the floor of the Senate, we're going to have to be able to say more than it just frees things up. We're going to have to have a thorough explanation of why this bill is necessary.
Yep, Mr. Chairman, we can certainly do that. One of the main things that I was worried about is that, again, being siloed, where the funding was coming through and then no authorization to be able to use personnel on one side or the other. I've been asked by my staff, and what we're worried about from an audit standpoint is, okay, for example, right now on the healthcare facilities, we have in the past and currently one of our SFD project managers that is working on that facility, and as that project moves forward, would be helping with oversight in that project. So the question becomes, Should a school facilities project manager be working on a general funded healthcare facility project? And by authorization of this operations division, where those people, where we have duties where they can work on either side of the house, they can do that. That frees up that question from a budget standpoint.
Okay, so operations on page 2, line 6, Romanet 3's operations division. What are the first two divisions?
The construction management division and the school facilities division.
So we're basically just uniting everything.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. And as was noted earlier by your staff, we're not asking for an administrator for that. The two current administrators will oversee their staff people. Again, it just allows us to move those people for work duties to wherever we need them to go.
Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So, Tamara, I do have one question on what's being removed. I haven't gone down through that B, Romanet I, through 7 and CD. Are those anything in there that we may want to have done to make sure that the reporting is complete? And
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, I understood the reason that the repealed provisions were included in the budget and were included in statute in the first place were to provide a mechanism to allow for the first year's estimates of what was going to be needed once these divisions were combined. And I believe that this same information is what the type of information that you would require through your normal budgeting process and the type of questions you can ask when presented the budget request from the agency. But there may be other reasons or policy reasons you want to include or keep some of this reporting and development procedures.
All right, so who's in charge of construction division right now?
It's a cabinet position.
Mr. Chairman, that's Director Del McComey is the director of the combined agency, the State Construction Department.
So, Del, you're in charge of both right now, right?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
So why not just get rid of the first two and just combine everything?
Mr. Chairman, I guess that's another option, is to have a State Construction Department without the divisions. I think
right.
One
and
of
if,
the things that
the,
would...
If it gets to be too big, yeah. Then the construction division head, in your case, can subdivide people under him, you know, like the sub guy in charge of school construction, another sub guy in charge of general construction.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I wouldn't see any change in the current staffing as far as how we have that made up as far as administrators to see that. I think one issue you may have that would require further statute changes, if that were to occur, is that you still have that division that would report to the State Facilities Commission, and then the other side reporting to the State Building Commission for subcommittees, and then reporting to the legislative State Facilities Committee. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator, Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Well, no, I don't think it was a promotion, but thank you for the thought. Mr. Chairman, thank you. So is this kind of a zero-based budgeting, and then we're transforming away from that, only you didn't call it that? So is there a reluctance to call it that? Is that what this was originally? And we're just removing the provisions that are kind of the standard provisions in a zero-based budgeting process?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. It was a zero-based budget originally. And as you saw when we presented back before Christmas in our budget, we didn't have the standard standard line there as we move forward. I would just share with the commission that's kind of how I look at a budget to start with, even though we may have a standard budget. If I start from square one, that's just what we did when I worked for the Department of Transportation. And so in the future, you may see an exception request for a reduction. Just because it's a standard doesn't mean I would keep it at a standard. So,
Don, you were going to address us.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to hopefully succinctly indicate that there's two purposes behind this bill. When the construction department was created, by statute, it had two divisions, and they came back and said that's not how we ended up things. We ended up with three divisions, schools, CAFCON, and this operations. That's not to say you don't have to agree with it. That's just the provision on lines 1 through 6 of page 2. The balance of the bill on the bottom of page 2 and all of page 3 is a change of the method for budgeting for state capital or state construction division. You'll recall they didn't have a standard budget and an exception budget, and they did things differently, kind of like ETS did for about 4 to 6 years. And the changes on the bottom of page 2, all of page 3, align them with the traditional base budget, standard budget, exception budget.
Yeah, I got that part. It's the organizational portion that I just, looking at it now, looking back at it, we created two divisions, but in reality, there became a third division operating with the other two.
Mr. Chairman, I think from a non-legislative standpoint or something that's codified, you're probably correct. The way that I would foresee us doing business in the future is through this operations division. Without that, I would be hard-pressed to continue in the next budget cycle after July 1st having my project manager on the school side continue to work on the healthcare facility building simply because of where his funding comes from. So the same thing that is occurring in the annual meetings that weren't present in the past on this construction management side with state agencies, there would be kind of a more of an informal meeting, but we're much more robust in how we're working with state agencies to look at their maintenance money, their major maintenance funds, and their overall operations and things that are going on the state side than has been done in the past. And so to do that, I'm using the school facilities planning division that's done that for many years on the school side to do that on the state side and build that same regiment for the state buildings and the community colleges and, in fact, with UW. And so what I'm trying to do is establish efficiencies rather than having to add staff because you're trying to mimic those same procedures that we may have on the school or see the construction management side that is efficient, is a better mousetrap, and rather than have them siloed, take those same personnel and no increase in personnel and put them towards those duties.
Don, or Del, my question is then, as you create this new division, will that result in a different classification of one or two of your employees? So in essence, you'll be giving two or three pay raises in order to effectuate this transition.
Mr. Chairman, we don't anticipate that at this point in time. I do have a couple of people, and it's not because of this division, but I do have a couple of people, particularly on the finance side, that have moved from job duties over the years, even on the school side, that even before I became director, have moved different positions. And I am going to ask for a reclass in a couple of those positions just to take a look and see where they're at. They're currently doing finance work, and they actually started off, or their classification is more in the secretarial side. but it doesn't have anything to do with this operation. I'd be doing that regardless.
So this is basically a reorganization with no new employees?
No new employees and no anticipated additional cost.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you, Dale.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions for staff? Thank you, staff. Committee, what's your pleasure?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Oh, I'm sorry. Any public comment? Welcome, Representative Steinmetz. Anyone want to make any comment? All right. No, public comment is closed. The bill's been moved and seconded. Any amendments? Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not quite sure how to amend because it might get complicated, but I'm inclined to agree with you that we really don't need three separate divisions within this for it to operate. And even given that at the moment Mr. McComey doesn't anticipate any cost changes down the road, having three deputy administrators seems potentially excessive. But I'm looking at the whole statute, and I'm not sure, would we just eliminate 3002 and 3003 completely?
Mr. Chairman, is that directed to me?
I guess.
Okay.
Yes.
If I may, then. Representative Schwartz, I believe there would be a few other conforming amendments that would be needed.
So how much work would it be? If my I'll ask Dell again. If my understanding of this is correct, Dell, you're basically forming operations, which is where the bulk of your people will be, and then construction and school, Capcom will be will be subdivisions of operations.
Mr. Chairman, they'll actually be equal to, they'll still exist as a division, but there's fewer people in that. So you have the administration, the administrator for those two divisions. You'd have the financial folks for those two divisions, and then it varies. I think there's one more person on the school side, George Glida.
It's 5 and 7, actually.
Right, yes.
But you've got a director, which right now is you.
That's correct.
And so I take it the administrators of both other divisions would be answerable to the director.
That's correct, and they are today, sir.
Which makes school facilities and construction management subdivisions of operations, if they're answerable to them.
Well, I guess I couldn't. I don't know if that's true or not.
Well, it doesn't say here that it doesn't say here. That's the problem is mm-hmm. They are answerable, going to be answerable to the director who's in operations, but it doesn't
Certainly.
Say that in the legislation. It makes it the legislation makes it sound like it's three completely separate divisions from each other.
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly what I anticipated. We'd have a construction management. We'd now have an operations, and we would have a school facilities division. And those are all answerable to the director of the state construction department. So I guess analogy is if you look at YDOT, for example, YDOT has a director.
This chart is not right. The director should not be in operations. The director should be up above. Outside of all three.
Mr. Chairman, as far as salary, and my salary currently comes
100%. I'm talking in terms of the organization chart here.
Right, but it's tied. What I'm trying to do is not tie it to where the money's coming from. Construction management is general fund.
Right.
Schools is school
foundation. Right.
School Capcom. And so, my salary currently is school Capcom, and it would be in the future. I'm not trying to change where the money's coming from, but I'm trying to have those functions that overlap, could go either way. Mine, for example, in overseeing both of those, would come from this would by having the operations division and my oversight of all of that, it wouldn't make any difference. I have people questioning right now. Well, your money director comes from the school CapCon budget, and you're attending JEC to talk about the prison. That's the general fund side of the house. Whether that's right or wrong, you know, I'm trying to get away from the bean counting side of it, making us less efficient.
Okay, so you gave
yes.
us this.
Yep.
Is this you up here?
See if
it looks like you. Yeah, does that
look
like you?
I may need my readers, but not quite that far away. That's correct, yes.
Okay, well then, who?
I report directly to the governor,
is,
and then they
the
three report to me.
Who is this director down here in operations? That's where we're confused.
I would fall under that, and again, that allows my salary, regardless of whether it's general fund or school money, to be able to operate on both sides of that house.
So that's one person. Well, that happens regardless if you're up here. Because you can...
You're one and the same.
Well, yes, it does. I'm one and the same there. I'm not asking for an additional position, but the director, my salary, it doesn't matter where my money comes from, I can operate on either side of that house or
but
in the operations.
You're in two places at once.
Well, I guess that's probably correct.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, actually, we can.
But the intent is for the operations division, those people other than myself are managed by the two administrators that we currently have on CM and SFD.
Well, I do not envy Senator Dockstader having to explain this on the floor of the Senate.
Yeah.
Gotta get a flow chart.
Mr. Chairman, I'll work closely with the senator.
All right. Thank you, Dale.
Yeah, thank
Any
you.
Other questions? Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't even know who I'm asking this question to, but what I'm trying to figure out...
Ask it to the director.
...is what the benefit of defining the structure of this department in statute is, as opposed to by operation.
Well, the definition in statute, according to this bill, is quite simple. There's three divisions. We're just adding a third division.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand that, but you suggested that perhaps that was unnecessary to have the three divisions. And
Actually, I was mistaken because Director McComey pointed out, the different divisions get their sources of funding from different piggy banks. So you've got to have separate divisions.
I hear
school
that.
Facilities comes from CapCon.
I'll let it go. I understand the different funding sources. I don't know how that can't be differentiated in the budget, but I'll let it ride.
So, Mr. Cocheo, I'm curious now that Dell's salary comes from the school side. And I'm curious why that is and whether or not we ought to fix that. Dell, do you know why?
Why are you being paid?
He likes getting paid.
It's not just what you do. I don't know if you can even talk about this. You're not authorized to talk about the general fund.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, when the two divisions were created into a single agency, again, the money that was there, everybody just merged over to work the budget for the first biennium. So out of working the budget in the first biennium and then things coming up at different times as far as, well, should you be taking salary or money that comes out of the school or from the general fund and using it over here, using it over there, I guess the best mousetrap in working with the budget's office and other folks is, can we create this operations division, given those same funding streams, funding those positions, so that we have the ability to work across division lines? The flexibility to do that with personnel.
That doesn't address your salary, though. You said your salary comes out of the school side.
It does. And so under that division, as the chairman had asked a little bit earlier, why are you listed as director? It's not two positions, but under that, that gives me then, because I am working both sides of the house, by being in that operations division as a personnel or a funding stream, that gives me the ability to cross both lines, even though my money comes from schools.
But why does your money come from schools if you're performing another function? Why don't we change that?
Mr. Chairman, that would certainly make it simple.
What do we have to do to change it?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know unless you want to split it 50-50 from general fund and school.
It's not statutory, is it?
Mr. Chairman, no. When we mark up their budget, Agency 27, you can take his salary and benefits line and fund it 50-50, or you can decrease, and I'll just say $100,000 a year of school funds and increase $100,000 a year general funds. You could do it either way. In the budget with an amendment.
So if you would just footnote that, and then if there's ever an increase for a salary raise for somebody, we'll take that out of Dell's salary, so you can put that as a marker for it next year, too.
Mr. Chairman, I would vote for $200,000 increase and take it out of either side.
Thanks.
Okay. Anything else? Anybody else?
Question.
No amendments? Question being called. John, please call the the roll on this House bill.
Senate
House bill.
Members of the committee, the roll call is on 18 LSO 0377, working draft number 3. Representative Burkhart.
Aye on the Senate file.
Representative Larson.
Aye.
Representative Schwartz.
Aye.
Representative Summers.
Aye.
Representative Walters.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Senator Dockstetter.
No.
Senator Driscoll.
Aye.
Senator Hastert.
Aye.
Senator Landon.
Aye.
Co-Chairman Nicholas.
Aye.
Chairman Burns.
No.
Mr. Chairman, the bill passes. House bill or Senate file?
House bill. All right, next ticket up is Paramutual Events Distribution of Fees. This is a Nicholas bill. So we can have it explained by any Nicholas that happens to be present.
Tamara, you can go ahead and explain it.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Brian Fuller, LSO staff attorney. My name's not Nicholas. Don't have Nicholas in my name, but I'll go ahead and explain it. This is 18 LSO 416, working draft 0.3, paramutual events distribution of fees. This is a resurrect of 2017 House Bill 173. In sum, this bill draft would require paramutual permittees to remit to the state an amount of 0.5%, 0.5% of the total amount wagered in both live and historic paramutual events, with those proceeds going to the general fund. Looking at the bill draft, on page 2, in paragraph 2, lines 5 and 7, those are conforming amendments to change the fraction to the decimal. On lines 11 and 19 are conforming amendments that simply remove the "and" from the end of those paragraphs. The substance of this bill draft, Mr. Chairman, begins on page 2, line 21. Paragraph 4 would require each permittee to pay an amount equal to 0.5% of the total amount wagered in both live and historic paramutual events to be deposited into the general fund. On page 3, line 6, is another conforming amendment. It adds paragraph 4 to be excluded from the requirement that all funds paid to the Paramutual Commission go to the paramutual account. And then page 4, line 8, would make this act effective July 1st, 2018.
Questions? Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to save me looking in my budget books, do we have a rough estimate on last year's revenue, how much this would be?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schwartz, I did ask Director Moore, he's here today as well, to provide that information. And for the historic horse racing total handle in 2017, the total wagered amount was approximately $420,210,000. Half a percent of that would be approximately $2.1 million. For the live events total handle, the total wagered amount was approximately $5.366 million. One half percent of that would be approximately $268,000.
And there has been no state take out of that before?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. Under current law, half a percent would go, depending on the type of event, would go to the parimutuel account, and then 1% of the historic take goes to the county and city and town where the permittee is located.
Okay. Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brian, could you just repeat those numbers again for us?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walter, certainly. For the historic horse racing, these are 2017 figures. The total wagered amount was $420,210,000. With half, 0.5% of that would be approximately $2.1 million. For the live events in 2017, the total wagered amount was $5.366 million, and 0.5% of that would be approximately $268,000.
I guess my question is to the sponsor of the bill is why the differential in the percentages between historic and live?
They're both the same percentage. They're both 0.5%.
Not the way I read this bill. I got 1.5 on live.
And actually, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, the information in on page 2, lines 4 through 11 of the bill draft is current law. The only changes in those lines on line 5 and 7 is just simply changing the fraction to the
to the
decimal.
Oh, okay.
In terms of the difference, there was a 2013 bill that passed that before 2013, Mr. Chairman, both amounts were 1.5%. And in 2013, paragraph 3, which is lines 13 and 19 of the bill draft, was inserted to where 1% of the historic take would go to the county and city and town where the permittee is located.
Okay. Got it now. All right.
And so, Mr. Co-Chair, just by way of why this bill passed the House last year and went over to the Senate and then got... I don't think it ever was released to committee by the Senate leadership. Don't know. I think it's towards the end of the session, or for whatever reason, but that's just what happened. The genesis of the bill is I think pretty simple. As we discussed earlier today, we're in a literally a $800 million deficit situation. What our obligations are as appropriators and as legislators is to help come up with revenue sources in order to move forward with our state finances, number one. Number two is the act of gambling, doing horse racing, and all those components is basically a privilege that is granted by the state. And it has its pros and cons both for various different reasons. And I would just submit that at the privilege to conduct paramutual, I think that there ought to be a remuneration to the state that we receive. And so this bill is just an attempt to not only provide that compensation to the local folks who are running the show, but to the state in general and to our general fund coffers. And so I think it not only appropriate, I think almost all other states do it that have paramutuals. And the idea that that we don't, I just think is bad policy. So that's what my position is on it. And I think that it's another avenue for revenue that we should look at, and it really wasn't looked at by revenue. And so I bring it to the JAC as a suggestion that this is one of the uses we ought to do to help fund education in our budgetary shortfall.
Representative Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly can't argue with the co-chairman. You know, well stated. And I guess in the back of my mind is just wondering when the timing is right, and maybe it's now. It has been enjoyable to see this be such a success, having contributed to the dialogue on the front end of this and having no idea that it would be as successful as it has been. It's been a real pleasure to see that industry return. And my fear is that it's pretty early in the game. We literally have just gotten these horses up and running, and I want to make sure they have what they need to invest here on the front end. We had testimony that we've got a couple people, a couple of track producers, or what do they call them? You know, those who can put on these races. And the testimony was that they, you know, they're still struggling to get up to level ground financially, because it wasn't all that long ago that this industry just completely collapsed. So that's my only caution is just if it's too early to hit something, you know, I just want to make sure we think it's up and running good enough that we can siphon off the top.
All right. Any other comments? Any public comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Eugene Joyce from Wyoming Horse Racing. I'm one of the operators here in Wyoming. There's two of us, Wyoming Downs and Wyoming Horse Racing LLC.
Are you the Horse Palace guy?
Yeah, I'm the Horse Palace guy.
Okay.
On Tuesday, Director Moore told you that back in 2010, his account was down to $40,000, and the commission told him to go down to Arizona and see if he could rope somebody to come up to Wyoming, and I'm that sucker that came up from Wyoming. And we started in 2011 with just four race days. Ran in 2012 again. In 2013, I'm grateful and blessed that House Bill 25 was passed. And I got a lot of faults, but ingratitude's not one of them. And we are truly grateful to the legislature for giving us a tool to help resurrect an industry. Back in 2010, you couldn't give away a Wyoming bred a racehorse. There was a yearling Wyoming bred thoroughbred that just sold for $20,000. I know, because I'm the sucker that paid $20,000 for it. But you know, we've invested a lot of capital to get this whole thing up and going, and millions and millions of dollars. And in the second year of operation, the AG came out with an opinion that shut the entire industry down for 4 months. And it was a big financial hit for both operators. We had to retool. We had to abandon $1 million in investment and come up with millions of dollars more to reinvest to get it up and going. And we've done that. And this is our second year of operation. I would tell you that my company just turned profitable about 12 months ago. And, you know, with that, those profits, you know, we're obligated to pay back the banks and the investors that have put up that money. Director Moore also stated to you that There was a question about how come we're not in all 14 counties that have paramutual. And again, that takes capital. And to tell you the truth, we were a little gun shy, and we needed to get our legs back under us to make sure that the deck wasn't reshuffled as far as, you know, what we would have to pay. Now, I know there was some talk about takeout and commission and handle. And you look at $420 million, and it's a gaudy number. I give you that. But what you have to understand is that that number is generated. It's kind of like an accounting ledger number. A person comes up to a wagering terminal, puts in a $50 bill, and sits down and plays for 45 minutes. He wins up, he comes down, he sits there, he's entertained, he has fun. And in that 45 minutes, he'll make $1,000 worth of bets. But that $50 bill is just sitting in there. The cash we take out of those terminals is what we operate off of, what we pay all our bills. So when we say the takeout is 7.5%, I think the number that was told you on Tuesday was 8%. I went back and I looked at 2017 numbers. The blended rate is 7.5% on that takeout. And it's not determined by statute. It's not determined by anything more than market forces. It's the customers. And I'll give you an illustrative account. When we were shut down, we had to retool. We had to come up with a product that conformed to the AG's opinion. The company I use came up with it faster than Wyoming Downs. Wyoming Downs had a product out there, but the takeout was set at 9%. And we were operating at that time at about 7.75%. And they were stuck with that product for 9 months. In the first 9 months of 2016, their average weekly handle was $434,000 a week. They got a new product in September, and they reduced their takeout down to 7.5%. The three remaining months in 2016, their handle was $1.8 million a week. Now, I say that to illustrate how sensitive the market forces are to the takeout. In other words, if a bettor does not feel like he can win every so often, he's going to get up. So if we raise the takeout, you know, it's going to drive customers away. It's going to reduce that big gaudy number, that big handle number that the city and county's take is calculated off of. And so the 7.5% takeout commission is what the industry lives off of. So when you see that 1.9%, which is our effective tax rate, and that's 1% to the cities and counties, 0.5% to the racing commission, and 0.4% to the breed fund, that comes out of that 7.5%. So effectively, what we're paying all our bills on is 5.6% of the gross handle. So our effective tax rate is not 1.9%. Our effective tax rate is 25%. 1.9% divided by 7.5 comes up to 25%. So that's the tax rate is 25%. If you raise it by 0.5%, making our tax rate now 2.4% of the gross handle, our effective tax rate out of our revenue is 32%. And I will tell you that that is really going to cripple the industry. Now, we had an explosive growth here from 2016 to 2017. Our industry grew by a rate of 75%, okay? And I think there's a lot more growth out there, but the growth is going to come from expanding into other markets. In order for me to open up a new OTB, it cost me about $500,000. The terminals that are used are $12,000 to $13,000 a piece. We normally open up with no less than 30 of these terminals. We have to do construction. You know, it's over $100,000, $150,000. And then the bills start with you know, payroll and all that other stuff. Now, we're in the big markets for a reason. We're in the big markets because they're very profitable. But if this industry is going to do everything we've promised you it's going to do, it needs to grow, and it needs capital to grow. Taking money away from the operators at this point, I believe is very counterproductive. Now, we're happy we have this opportunity to work. We feel like we're paying our fair share. The money we pay to the cities and counties is not money they're coming to ask to take out of the general fund. My payroll this year is over $2 million a year. And you talk about expanding the tax base with jobs. That money's spent 10 times over in the communities that we have those employees. So we've had tremendous success, but we are a nascent industry. We've just gotten started. And in order for us to make this a better deal for the state, we need the opportunity to grow. And so what's the best and highest use of that money? It's within the industry. Since 1967, our industry has been self-funding. We have never asked for a dime from the general fund. And we believe that the highest and best use right now for that money is within the industry. It gives us capital to invest in capital improvements at the racing facilities and to expand and open new sites. And so in all due deference to Representative Nicholas, I believe that half of 1%, it sounds like a real small percentage, but it increases our effective tax rate from 26% to 32% at a time when this money is critical for our success to get our legs under it. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to take any questions.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thanks. And I appreciate it, Eugene, your position on it, and it's totally understandable. So what's the payout rate right now for with the two companies for the 91% or 91.5%? I'm trying.
Our takeout 7.5%, so it would be 92.5%.
So if you just change that to 92% instead of 92.5, that would be the equivalent on your payout of $2 million. Correct.
The question is where does that come from? Right now, the money comes from me. If your bill would take the money away from the operators, we would have to pay that. And as I stated before,
well, hold on, it wouldn't come from the operators if you just modified what your payout is on what your award is. So if you go from a 92% to a 91.5%,
right,
then it wouldn't come out of your pocket.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, that's true, but as I stated before, the takeout is a very sensitive number, okay? And I believe if we increase the takeout, the overall number, the handle, has a chance of going down, okay? This is not a static, number. It is generated by the customer, experience sitting and wagering on historic horse racing. And as I stated before, you know, Wyoming Downs was at 9%, and they couldn't get any traction at all. You know, they're up to $2.5 million a week, and their takeout is slightly less than mine. I mean, they're generating big numbers. We're both generating numbers, but it's something I think best left to the market forces.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I can just kind of go over this again, because I don't play any of these games. So if I, in the historic racing, if I took $50 and put it in the machine and let's say I lost it all and sat there and stare at the machine for another hour, and left, bemoaning my fate, then the handle would be $50. But on the other hand, if I came back and put in my $50 and let's say I'm just making things up, you know, but let's say it turned into $100 and then, I bet again and it went down to 50 and I mean, you know, just went through all different permutations and at the end of an hour, I was down to zero again. You know, I lost my original $50, but because I had bet it 30 times, the handle was whatever, $1,000 or something like that. I mean, is that what you're saying? Is that that's how it works?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson. Right. So you put your $50 bill in, you make your, let's say, a $5 bet, and you lose that. You're down to 45. Then you bet another $5, and you're down to 40. But you win that bet, and it pays you 50. So now you have $90 to play with. And then the customer wagers, bets it down to 20, comes back up. And as long as he doesn't hit zero, you know, now he can realize his profit at any time. I mean, the customer can say cash out, and once he hits 150 and take the money away. So the calculation on the gross handle, and again, you have to understand too that it's not Wyoming residents with $420 million in their pocket jamming them into these machines. It's really what the takeout is, because that's the money that's being transferred among bettors. Now, there's some bettors that lose. There's some bettors that win. Some bettors, I mean, we've had a jackpot hit for $350,000. That goes all to one customer. But those nickels and dimes added up as other people lost or won or what have you. Yeah, every transaction is recorded. And, again, this is a computer system-based operation. So every activity, every wager, every dime that's wagered is recorded. And so every time, let's say, a dollar is bet, okay, it's calculated that the state is going to get 1.9% of that dollar wagered. And that's the calculation for when, you know, the state gets paid. But like I said, at the end of the day, when we take the money out of the terminals and we put them in the bank, it's equal to 7.5% of the total amount wagered. Does that answer your question?
So another way to say that is, if you're playing this game and on average, and you sit at the bar for 3 hours and play it, and you have come in with $500, you're likely to walk out with $475 or whatever.
That should be a zero.
Yeah. I mean, the odds are it's a 92% return. Is that a fair characterization?
Mr. Chairman, yes, yeah. That's...
So that keeps him rolling. It keeps the... So it's a longer, more, I suppose, entertaining than sitting there playing blackjack and you lose $100 on a hand. It's a different kind of game. It's,
But so, in essence, this, the tax eve, or whatever we're calling it, even as it is now, is essentially a gross receipts tax rather than an income tax, right? Because we're just taxing it on how much churn there is rather than the profit to them. Is that right?
I agree with that.
Any other questions? Senator Driscoll.
Got a handful of them probably, Eugene. Thank you. The 92.5%, have you guys varied it up and down? You talked about the different take on it. Have you guys messed with that some since you've started? Because we don't regulate that. Obviously, you can make it go anywhere from 0 to 100. What have you played with, and what have been the results? Or have you?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, yes, it's gone up and down. My company, we've been anywhere between 8% and 7.5%. 7.25%. And part of how the takeout number becomes a reality is what type of terminals you have on your wagering floor. For instance, there is a lower takeout on a $5 game because those are people that have a lot more money to spend and we want to entice them to play. So that's about a 6% takeout. On some of the penny games that you could bet as little as 20 cents or a quarter, those could go as high as 9%. And so it's kind of a blended average, but it's something that we, and not just me, but people in this industry will tell you, determines the amount of handle. If you place it too high, and you might not think that an extra 1% penny off a dollar means something. We have seen that happen on certain games that customers won't play because the takeout is put too high.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, follow up. I've got two or three. How do you compare statistically, I'm sure you guys do, with casinos, and I realize that you're historical. I'm not going to bet Colorado, South Dakota, Vegas, because South Dakota, at least I've pulled up and look, I know what they're paying. So how do yours compare with them?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, I would tell you that we're right in the sweet spot. I think that if you look at industry averages, and again from consultants we've had, gaming consultants, they would tell you that we're right in that sweet spot.
And what's the zone of that sweet spot?
I would say it's probably 7.25 to 7.75.
And then the difference between your owned spots that you own everything, the building and everything, and the ones you're paying a operator, what are they getting for location? Obviously, the ones you own, you get everything on the take on them. The other ones, you're paying them either rent or so much a machine or part of the take. How do you figure that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, we have two business models. One is where we locate within an existing business. For instance, the Beacon Club in Mills, Wyoming. Because they have built-in traffic, our leases with them give them a percentage of what we make, because we want to incentivize them. We want our customers to be their customers and vice versa. We also have another business model where we just have a straight lease with a storefront. It's like, you know, in a strip mall, for instance, in Cheyenne here. We're up on Del Range Road. And we lease that through the strip mall owner, and it's a per square foot price. Okay. If that answers your question.
Then one last, and I'm done. We're not on any of this. Seem to be paying any attention to the track, and so this money, does it all just flow into the parimutuel, and the track just gets their cut on the physical locations versus the historic? Because appears to me we're being really vindictive to track owners, and that's the part why I went along with historic, was to get horses and racing there. And it looks to me like we're beating the heck out of them in comparison, just because they don't have an equal shot. Can you? I guess I'm throwing you a bit of a softball to elaborate on the effects this might have on tracks.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, I would tell you that. The track operator bears the burden 100% to generate the revenue and then to put on the show at the live racing venues. And in order to do that, you have to attract horsemen and you have to put up purse money. I would tell you that our live racing expenses are north of $2 million a year. That's just us. But when I started the racing facilities, I tried to purchase Wyoming Downs at the time, and they wanted too much money. And so I looked to the county-owned facilities, and because that, back in the go-go days, back in the late 80s, early 90s, we had four racetracks operating here. Three were county-owned facilities. But they had been mothballed for 19 years. And so one of the expenses I had to shoulder was repairing those racing surfaces and improving the facilities in order to put on the shows. And we bear that expense right now. So I hope that answers your question. I'm not sure.
Kind of does. Mr. Chairman, one, I guess it leads to one more question. One, what's the cost to bring one up? Because I'm bringing a bill that's going to look at it. Second is, does an increase take the way we're looking here? What direct effect does that have on a track operator? Because I get the historic. It runs. It's electronic. What direct effect is it going to have to take another chunk out of these tracks?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, I think it'd be disastrous. I mean, I'm not going to say it's going to ruin the industry, but it's going to take a big chunk out of us. I mean, as I said, we just turned profitable. This increased tax would knock my profit down from, 12% to about 6%. Now, if you told me back in 2013 that you're going to put together a business, invest tens of millions of dollars, and your rate of return on that is going to be 6%, I would have said, forget it. We're supporting a lot of different people and types of businesses. You know, we're a big part of the ag industry. We mentioned the Wyoming Bread Program. There's going to be $1.7 million in incentives to people that breed Wyoming and race Wyoming horses here in the state of Wyoming. Director Moore told you about people from out of state purchasing property, importing brood mares, bringing in stallions to Wyoming. And there's a big carryover effect. Again, just our payroll the tourism aspect of it. I think 70% of the people that have a Wyoming racing license live out of state. And so we bring a lot of people in these cities and counties where we operate, and it generates revenue. They're staying in hotels, they're going out to restaurants, they're getting their truck repaired, they're buying horse trailers. So, like I said, I'm truly grateful for the opportunity that the legislature's given us. I really think, though, that, we've come a long way in a short period of time, and I still think there's a lot of growth out there, potential. I think we could, I don't think we're going to increase 75% this year, but I think we could grow 20, 25%. I think in 2 years, the gross handle could be north of $600 million. So, we increased the amount of money we gave to the cities and counties, 16 over 17, by $1.7 million. So, I guess I'm asking you help. I'm begging you. Let the horse run. Leave the money in the industry where we can use it better than you can, because we're going to grow that pie, and that's going to be more money to the cities and counties. So, but we need growth in order to do that, and we need capital in order to grow.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burkhardt.
So, I guess I don't understand gambling. Believe it or not, I used to live in Las Vegas, and I still don't. But Nevada collects 6.7% tax after they pay out the winnings. And that's one of the lowest actually in the world. And they seem to make plenty of money. So do the other states. And we're talking here about 0.5%.
Could
you give me just sure. Some background, please?
Yep. Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhardt, the 6% tax, as I understand it in Nevada, is on their profits, not the gross amount of money bet in the state of Nevada. And again, that 1.9%, I know it sounds like very small, but again, when you look at our revenue, the revenue I've got to pay my bills with, it's a 25% tax. It's not 6%, it's 25%. So I would tell you that we're paying a much higher percentage than Nevada.
Mr. Chairman, the report I'm looking at says it's tax on gross, not net.
I don't have that in front of you. I could come back to you and give you, I guess, an alternate opinion on Las Vegas versus Wyoming. They're not supporting live horse racing either. So,
any more questions for this witness? Senator Driscoll, your mic's on.
I'm what?
Do you have any more questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Would anyone else like to address this bill? Mr. Moore.
Can you hear me now?
No.
No, not
yes,
at all.
Yes, I can.
Good, good. Thank you very much. My name is Charlie Moore. I'm the director of the Wyoming Paramutual Commission. Again, thank you. It's good to see everybody today. Just to clarify Representative Burkhart's question, if you allowed Vegas-style gaming in Wyoming, absolutely, you could go to a 6%. You could go to that. And it's due to the expense that's involved. It's very costly to put these terminals in. They're all hubbed through the internet. You're commingling with other states. And as Mr. Joyce said, it is very expensive. It's a very expensive way to go about it. Plus, they have to put on their live racing. The operators of the historic racing terminals are the same people that are putting on the live paramutual events in Wyoming. And as most of you may remember, when this bill was brought forward, it was all about the horses. And we have resurrected an industry, thankful for you. The tax rate, Wyoming, the tax rate is 1.9%. Kentucky is 1.5%. And Oregon, I believe, is 1.5% as well.
Of gross?
Yes. Yes. And those are, for the most part, for all practical purposes, those are the only three states that offer historic racing. So, in comparison, if you're comparing apples to apples, those are the percentages. That's really all I have, unless there's any questions for me.
Any other questions for the witness? Mr. Co-Chair.
I've got a question. What's the payout in Kentucky? You know what the percentage is?
You know, I had those, excuse me, Chairman Burns, Co-Chairman Nicholas, I don't have that in front of me right now. I believe it's very similar, yes. We do not commingle in the state of Kentucky. We only commingle into Oregon, but the terminals are based the same. They're configured very similar, but I can have that those figures to you.
And I'm just curious because just looking on the website, it looks like for live horse racing, it's around the national average is about 82.5%. And there's obviously some significant differences between live and historic. And at the end of the day, the historic is the more profitable, less expensive operations to run. And even, you know, if you go to slot machines, it varies between 89% up to 93%. Mm-hmm. And those are slot machines in casinos. And they can obviously do that percentage spread on the payouts. And so I'm just curious.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Driscoll.
Just a quick question. Do either one of you guys have interest in Kentucky or Oregon in any fashion?
These
operators.
The operators.
No.
Perfect.
What about the other one?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
First, I thought you were talking about me. I'm like, holy cow.
Did you want to address this again?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back to Representative Burkhart's question about Nevada and 6%, and it just occurred to me. That 6% is on all forms of gambling. It's not on the slot machines, because the slot machines are paying basically what we pay. And if it was 6% on that, they'd be keeping 12% and not the 6 or 7% that they do keep. When you bet at the cards table or the play blackjack or roulette, when you lose, 100% of your money goes to the house. 100%. So, of course, they can pay 6% on that because they're taking it all. There's nothing by statute or law that they have to pay X amount back to the gambling public on those type of wagers. But if you want, I can get back to you with more information on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other members of the public like to address this bill? Would anyone else like to address this bill? Ryan? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Committee, what's your pleasure? Moved? Moved and seconded. Any amendments?
Mr. Chairman, I have one.
Senator Driscoll.
I'm wanting to strike out the live track part of it, which would be on line six. Strike after events. Strike and 1.5%. Parentheses 1.5% of the total amount wagered attributable to live paramutual events. Just flat strike it out. Mr. Chairman, starting on line six.
Page two,
I'm sorry. After historic paramutual events, strike and 1.5%, in parentheses 1.5% of the total amount wagered attributable to live paramutual events, which ends on page eight.
I'll second for discussion.
Page eight or line eight? So, page two, line six, delete halfway through that line after events, delete the rest of the line, all of line seven, and line eight through the comma. Is that correct?
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. That's been moved and seconded.
Mr. Chairman.
You want to explain your amendment first?
I do. I think we're putting a deal that potentially they differentiate them, obviously. I'm trying to keep as much money at the track as we can. That was the whole idea of this to start with, was to encourage live racing. And you want to go ahead and interrupt me, Lloyd, if you...
No, please, to
go ahead and keep the live racing. And, you know, that was the only reason I ever went for... I had co-sponsored on the original bill, and it was... I grew up with live racing. It's fun, it's good, and it's a great impact on the cities and towns. And I hate to see us put any more burden on it.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Boy, I understand that 1.5% is the in existing language. That's not an increase. That was just changing. If you go to the left of that where it showed 1/2, it just changed that to that new number. So that 1.5, if I understood it correctly, is in existing statute and is under what they've currently been operating.
I think you've got to
Mr.
go to...
Mr. Chairman, so I'm going to have to strike
page 2,
that.
Line 23.
Go to page 2, line 23, and strike and live paramutual. Sorry, thanks for the catch.
Well, I should have that a friendly amendment.
Like I wanted to.
Okay. Tamara, do I want to, or Brian, do we want to get also strike events or leave that in there?
Mr. Chairman, I would leave that in there. So
events.
On line 23, strike the words and – delete the words and live to where it would read, 1.5% of the total amount wagered attributable to historic paramutual events.
Okay.
And, Mr. Co-Chair, just in for discussion, I think that amendment was made on the House side last year. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Chairman Nicholas, that's correct. Yeah.
All right. So does that still leave out this? That still call for the repeal on line seven? Is that necessary? Okay. Okay. So we're only cutting out those two words. And it's been seconded. Any discussion? Any other discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That amendment has passed.
I have one more, Mr. Chairman. Now that we've done that, on page 2, line 1, we're set up on every Wednesday to collect. Following any paramutual event, the permittee shall. I think we ought to change that to on the first day of each month. Strike every Wednesday on line 1 and go on the first day each month. Otherwise, the historic events, we're going to collect them after live racing events. I believe. Once again, go ahead, Lloyd.
What if the first day is on Sunday?
I'm open to any suggestion. I just don't want it after events. It'd either be now every day.
First day of the month.
First day of the month.
First business day.
his first business day of the month. Does that suit you, Mr. Chairman? It's your bill.
Have we got a second on the motion?
Is there a second? Nobody's willing to give this man a second just for discussion's sake?
I'll second. And actually, I just have a question for Eugene. If it makes a difference, if it's significant, it would save you money, would it, in terms of operations, harder for you to audit? I don't know. I'm curious.
Does that make any difference if we change every Wednesday to the first business day of the month? It says every Wednesday. Following an event.
That's why it's very interesting.
Right. Yes. Yes, that's the weekly. So it's the weekly. This is done every. Right now it's not.
Because we took the live events out of here, it's the only money that would be collected on the tax, the state tax, would be from the historic racing. Yes?
No, there's already an assessment.
Okay, you're right.
So Mr. Chairman, how is it remitted now then?
Every Wednesday following the parimutuel event.
So do they only pay when they're running? I guess I'm not understanding.
Director, why don't you go ahead and explain it for us.
Yes, thank you. Chairman Burns, Senator Driscoll, when we're running our every Wednesday, we receive payment from the permittees, whether they're running live racing, historic racing, simulcasting of live events. So every Wednesday we receive a check, and that's deposited into the parimutuel accounts, into the different aspects of that.
Withdrawn.
Representative Schwartz, we're back on the bill. Representative Larson, we're back on the bill.
We are back on the bill. I just have a question, if I may. When we deleted live, does that include live simulcasting then?
That's a good question.
I understood, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I understood the presenters of the amendment to just be live horse racing within the state.
Mr. Chairman, track racing, flat track racing live.
Yeah. In the state.
Not any electronic of any form.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't say that on the bill. It says historic and live. So is live the simulcast stuff, or is it just the local?
Chairman, now that we've passed it, I'm going to have to make another amendment to the amendment because my intent, and I'll let staff figure it out, is only for live flat track races.
How about
using real horses?
Let them figure it out.
They'll figure it out, staff.
I'll second Ogden's amendment.
Conceptual
amendment.
Could we repeat the amendment?
Ogden will repeat.
I'm losing track.
So speak. Just for clarification, on the numbers that we received, the $265,000 that was would have been the 0.5 on live racing. Does that also include simulcast?
Senator Burns, or Chairman Burns, Co-Chairman Nicholas, yes. That was a combined number.
So the net effect of it is, do we know how much is which is which, or can you break that down and? Live versus track racing?
Versus simulcast.
Yeah.
If you give me, Chairman Burns, Co-Chairman Nicholas, if you give me a few minutes, I can.
Okay. Eugene, you know off the top of your head what the percentage is?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, I'm just looking at the raw numbers.
Live horse racing. I don't think we exceeded $1 million in wagering on live horse racing in the state. But I could tell you that simulcast horse racing is about $5 million a year. So that would be applied The simulcast number is a much larger number.
Okay.
That's all I can tell. You like to bring a new amendment that says after historic on line 23, add in simulcast? After on line 22, after the word historic, add the words in simulcast. That way, we still leave out the in the live Wyoming stuff. One more question: are the live races in Wyoming simulcast to other locations?
Yes. Chairman, go ahead.
You go ahead,
Mr. Chairman. I'm proud to say that we do simulcast out of state. We, thanks to live streaming technology. We don't have to have an uplink and decoders and all this, and we do send our signal out of state.
And no, I'm talking about
intrastate.
So if you're having a race in Rock Springs, can I see, watch it in Sheridan?
You betcha. Yeah, it goes to all
and
our OTBs.
And I believe the spirit of your amendment is to not tax that. All right, so we need more.
Live out of state. Simultaneously.
Yeah.
I want to encourage everything I can. You set your rules right. I want to get
just get rid of the simulcast too.
Historic.
Amen. Thank you.
And out of state simulcast? That's right.
So that's the conceptual amendment.
Brian, Tamara, you got that? After on line 22, after historic, and maybe if you want to wordsmith this a little, but the idea is and out-of-state simulcast events.
Out-of-state originated simulcasts.
Or simulcast originating out-of-state.
Mr. Chairman, Tamara Evely here. Brian will know better than I will once he goes to make these amendments, but I'm not sure that we're currently accounting for out-of-state versus in-state simulcasted events, so we might need to make currently accounting for simulcasted or differentiating between those two. We may need to make conforming amendments to conceptualize the intent of this amendment.
Well, I imagine we aren't because we're not taxing them. They're just paying out everything to the counties and cities, right? Regardless of whether it's historic or live or simulcast. So it might become an accounting function on your part.
Chairman Burns, what we pay out to the cities and counties is from historic horse racing, not from none of the simulcasting that we're talking about of live paramutual events. So it would be a bit of an accounting issue, but we can track that.
The cities and counties are not benefiting from any tax on the simulcast?
Chairman Burns, that's correct.
Oh.
Cities and counties only are getting money from the historic horse racing. They're getting the 1% from the historic horse racing.
I'm sorry, I've forgotten your name.
Eugene Joyce.
Otherwise, I would have called
that's back. That's okay. Just don't call me late for dinner. Chairman Burns, the reason the industry needed historic horse racing was because the traditional revenue streams to the industry were drying up. The largest one, the one that generated the most income in years past for 20 years that supported all the live horse racing was simulcasting on live imported horse racing.
Right.
That was over $10-11 million in wagers a year. When we started back up in 2011, because the OTB system had been shut down for a year, when we started back up, what we discovered was we were only at about $6 million. And that's because of all the online internet competition for people that want to bet on horse racing. They can do it a lot easier from the comfort of their couch on a laptop than going down to your local OTB. And that's been an industry trend for the last, 10 years or so.
Wait a minute, I can watch horse racing at home and bet on it?
That's correct.
Is that legal?
It's legal in this state. It's legal in just about every state except Utah, I believe, and Hawaii. Wow. So.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a question, but I do have a comment. I think to be consistent with what we do for locals, we probably ought to consider pulling that and just going back to
historic.
I think that's consistent with the locals.
And then if simulcast and live grows fast enough, you know, grows enough, then
so
tax the crap out of them.
Well, right now it's $268,000, and if they need that money for the live, maybe that's
yeah. Vote on it that way. That's good. Second.
All right, so we're so
striking all mine, striking second.
Go back to the original amendment.
To the, that's already passed.
Yeah.
All right, that's good. We haven't had a vote on it, so you withdraw that amendment.
Sure.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. If I can ask a question then. So looking at the bill in the current – and maybe I – because I'm just not finding it fast enough, so maybe Tamara can help us. But on page 2, lines 4 through 11, it's a section 2, and it says there's a certain amount attributable to historic parimutuel, and then on line 8, a certain amount attributable to live parimutuel credited to the state treasurer. And then in Romanet 3 on line 13, it says pay an amount equal to 1% of the historic. So what I want to know is what happens to that 1.5% attributable to the live? There's a paragraph that's not in the bill that probably tells me where the live goes, and I just wonder where does that go?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson. On page 3 of the bill draft, beginning with lines 4, going down to line 9, it provides that all sums paid except those in paragraph 3, which is the portion that goes to the counties and cities and towns, or 4, which would be the portion that would go to the general fund should this bill draft pass, provides that those amounts, so that 1.5% is credited to the parimutuel account.
Mr. Chairman, okay, so the live all goes to the parimutuel account, and only the historic is paid out.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, under paragraph 2, 0.5% of the historic goes to that parimutuel account.
Right, but I mean the live goes to the part that is attributable to live goes to the parimutuel account, and the part that is only the part attributable to historic goes now to account.
No.
I'm going to vote no just because I don't know what the hell
none going of now. The live goes to cities and counties.
Right, that's not what I said.
Well, I think that's what you're trying to say.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other comments?
We're
back on the bill as amended with the one amendment that deletes and live.
Question
being called. Don, please call the roll.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the roll call is on 18 LSO 0416, working draft 0.3 as amended. Representative Burkhart.
I'm sorry?
Sorry, you had it right.
Representative Burkhart.
Aye.
Representative. Oh, wait a minute, Don. No, you had it right.
Representative
aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Representative Schwartz.
Aye.
Representative Summers.
Aye.
Representative Walters.
No.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Senator Dockstetter.
No.
Senator Driscoll.
No.
Senator Hastert.
Aye.
Senator Landon.
No.
Co-Chairman Nicholas.
Aye.
Chairman Burns.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, the motion fails.
All right. That's that. Anything else to come before the committee? All right. Tomorrow we begin markup. So saddle up. And I will see you all at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.